Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. Hi, and welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show. We're looking forward to bringing you the guest that I have this week, Daniel O'Shaughnessy. Really fascinating conversation. We dive into a whole bunch of stuff. Not least Daniel's sobriety, which he does some fantastic work around that. So looking forward to sharing this interview that I did with Daniel for the Alcohol Free Life podcast. Just before we get into that, I just wanted to share a few bits and pieces that are going on. As you may know, I run the Platinum Awards for Natural Products and Services, UK Health Radio, very much part of that and have been for ages. We've been going for, gosh, 11 years, and I've got the amazing celeb judges, Joe Wood, Glynis Barber and Cary Grant, along with myself. And what we try and do is just recognize the best in natural and organic products, but also services. So if you do have a natural product and you would like some recognition for it, maybe you're even a very small brand, because we're not just talking big brands here. It's open to everyone. And you know, we recognize that sometimes it's one person in their bedroom making amazing skincare or whatever, and you're just getting started out. So we love to champion new brands as well as the more established ones. So we have categories, obviously, for skincare and beauty, for home and garden, for mother and baby. We have categories for food, alcohol-free drinks, everything really, cleaning your home without chemicals, you know, everything to do with holistic living and well-being. And then in addition to that, we have categories for coaches, for therapists, for practitioners. So if you're doing any work really in the well-being arena and you'd like to get some recognition for that, then check out the Platinum Awards. There is a fee to enter, because we do a mini PR package for you along the way and aim to get as much promo out there as we can. We also are working with Hello Love, who are our charity partners, and we are of course working with UK Health Radio. So check out platinumawards.co.uk and see if it's something that is of interest. If you don't have a brand, but maybe you're just interested in well-being and holistic products, I hope you are, do check out imperfectlynatural.com, where you can get to see some of the brands that have entered, and you can nominate them as well. You can actually place your nomination for some of your favorite brands. So that's our Platinum Awards. We will be announcing our winners in September at Hello Love in London. Just ahead of all of that, in addition, as I'm sure many listeners know, I run the Sober Club. It's a community for people who are quitting the booze or they're already sober. So the sober and the sober curious. It's very much a well-being platform. So come and join us if you're interested in quitting alcohol, or you've already quit alcohol and now you're thinking about what's next. So many people find that once they quit the booze, that's when they really start to care about their health and well-being. So it would be great to have you as part of the club. We become cheerleaders for each other in the club. We really do. And also, of course, I train people to be sober coaches. And that's an interesting one, because, again, so often people quit alcohol and they become a little bit unfulfilled in the work they do, because they have this sense that, you know what, there could be more there for me. I could be giving back. I could be supporting other people who are where I used to be. We don't work with anyone who is clinically dependent or anyone who is at rock bottom. It's not AA or 12 steps. We're working with grey area drinkers. So we know that term now. It means, you know, it's not black or white. It's somewhere in between. It's people who are drinking more than they want to. They're still fully functioning, but they're drinking more than they want to. I was certainly in that position for so many years, going, you know, round the block. I'd quit for a while, then I'd go back to alcohol, then I'd quit for a while, until finally the light bulb came on and I was able to recognize, hold on a minute, life is better without any alcohol. And that's when I wish I could have sought out the help of a sober coach to help me, you know, to get the support I needed. And we work with our clients to help them, you know, regulate the nervous system, really get all the pieces in place around that whole holistic picture. Because it's never only about not drinking. It really is that holistic picture that we try to look at. So if that's where you're at and you're someone who's been thinking, Actually, I'd really like to add something to the work I do, or I'd like to have a whole new career. It's a whole training program. It's a premium program. You literally get a business at the end of it. You can train to be a sober coach as long as you have already quit the booze, and you could literally be up and rocking with your own new business within 8 weeks of doing the training. So we have some really amazing success stories. And if you're interested at all, feel free to drop me a message. You can find me very easily on social media at Janie Lee Grace, or you can go to thesoberclub.com and just click on the link, become a sober coach. And you'll see there that there's access to a webinar where we tell you all the ins and outs. You can see all the frequently asked questions. And I'm chatting to one of the sober coaches who trained with me a couple of years ago, Polly, who now works full time as a coach and absolutely loves it. It's so incredibly rewarding. So if that's of interest to you, drop me a message. You can drop me an email, janie@janieleegrace.com, or you can follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. I know it's not for everyone, but I just thought it's worth mentioning because sometimes there's people thinking, oh, I wonder whether there's something else there for me. Quit alcohol. And I've just got this sense that, you know, I'd love to give back. Maybe there's a different kind of purpose out there for me now that I've quit alcohol. And it's amazing when you get to use your enthusiasm for something incredibly positive.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
My guest is Daniel O'Shaughnessy, and Letting Go of Perfect is his deeply personal and empowering exploration of what it means to grow into yourself, really, as a gay man navigating body dysmorphia, shame, all of that stuff, the pressure to be perfect. So there's a lot to dig into here, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, I've glanced at the book. I've not been able to read it all, but I love the fact that you've done some real deep dives in there into the impact of trauma, of limiting beliefs, and all of that stuff, which often that's glossed over, isn't it? Tell me a bit about your background then, for anyone obviously who's not come across you before. Let's kind of go right back and dig into some of the stuff.
So I originally, when I fell out of university, you know, when you do one of those degrees, you just feel like going to university back in the day. I worked in drug addiction for a while. And so in that kind of space, I got the kind of feel around working with people, and that gave me the buzz. But I was always seeing the missing link around health and how it shaped addiction and how it showed benefit to people. Mm-hmm. So that led part of the reason why I started becoming interested in nutrition. And then fast forward, I became a nutritionist. And then that was my hyper-focus for a number of years. Let's just say I was tried every diet under the sun. I had all these routines. I had a clinic. It was quite successful being a nutritionist. But I began to see gaps in that. And so that started the journey of self-discovery, because I'm a gay man and I saw some sort of disconnect from how wellness culture is focusing on all this optimization and supplements and diets. But unconsciously, I think I had some slight cognitive dissonance at the time, because I was practicing as a nutritionist, but at the same time, I had my own addictive behaviors that I kept completely secret, because they were quite normalized in my community. Mm-hmm. That was steroid addiction. Was the kind of...
Oh, really? What, in terms of, because you were going to the gym kind of idea?
I was going to the gym and everyone around me was taking them. And
really?
It was just the dumb thing to take steroids, because it's just body image issues are so prevalent in the gay world. Mm. It's almost like it's just accepted. Like it's just, that's the issue. And we all get ready for holidays, or we don't feel comfortable in... It's more than what the mirror says.
Yeah, of course.
I have this quite curious mind, and so that led me eventually to a kind of my going through my path of recovery from.
Wait, so you were on steroids? Anything else? Were you drinking alcohol as well?
I was drinking alcohol, but I wasn't necessarily the person that would go out and get completely blackout drunk. Because alcohol, I have an Irish background, alcohol was celebrated in my family. Alcohol was something that you aspired to. And it was every other possible substance was a problem except alcohol. And
yeah.
It was always the thing that was, when it was the elephant in the room, it was always sugar-coated that it was something else, or we could not go there. So I never once thought that alcohol was an issue for me.
Mm.
And I wasn't someone who would go out and I wasn't at the level I thought of some of the people I used to see in my recovery working days. So, I thought, okay, and it's also, let's go out for drinks. And it was so socially accepted. What prompted me to give up alcohol was a part along the journey of my healing and from the steroids, but also healing from all the trauma I've experienced. So what I have this curious mindset, and I started looking into the research around psychedelics. And what I read about them, they started opening my mind about the conversations around health. And so I did this in safe and legal settings. So I went abroad to do this. And it was so...
There so are we talking about ayahuasca or something like that?
Yeah,
or,
so it's just... Or- there are different types of psychedelics. So there's many of them. Mm. And the main ones that people talk about are ayahuasca or psilocybin. So ayahuasca is a plant from the Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's two different types. It's like a bark and a leaf. And somehow when you eat them separately, it doesn't do anything. But when you combine them, they allow the body to absorb the DMT, so to say. Mm. And that gives you almost... I want to say it's almost like an honest life review, let's say. And I don't know if you have knowledge of using knowledge of psychedelics, but it's something that isn't for the faint-hearted. And I thought that it would be very much, because alongside my days of using alcohol, of course, all my friendships were around drug plates as well.
Yeah.
And drugs were something that was very interesting for me, because I could always separate myself from it, but it was always ingrained in my culture that we would meet, and there'd always be drugs around. But when I started my healing journey, all of the mirror, what psychedelics do is the nature of it is to reveal. And these revealed to me that, yes, all my behaviors and my lifestyle is technically an issue. And they don't solve the issue. They tell you to go and work on it. So long story short, that taught me to, it almost shocked me into giving up alcohol in a way, not in like a scary way. It just showed me what a sober life could look like.
Yeah.
Clearer headed, not like chasing my tail with anxiety the whole time.
Sure.
And more growing into myself. That's quite the important thing. So that's then led me to, I studied a subject called transdisciplinary practice at master's level, and then I based my research around psychedelics and how they actually work. So all this has put a different conversation on what health is for me.
Yeah, so absolutely. But so and along the way, I don't know kind of about the timing, but did you stop the steroid use as well and the drug use?
So the steroid use just naturally fell off because I realized that I was just doing, the steroid use was a means for belonging in the my community.
Yeah, yeah.
It was to try to be accepted. But the more I did, and it was almost before I didn't think about the consequences of steroids and the side effects. I brushed them off because it was the benefit outweighed at the time as more than the risk. But
yeah.
If I really am honest about it, I was experiencing so many side effects.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the advice I was getting from people that were using it were just like, use this pill to combat this.
And one sticking plaster on top of another.
Exactly. So I was a walking pharmacy. And because it's so normalized that, in fact, when I gave it up, I got more rejection than...
That was going to be my next question. What happened then? If all of this was so normalized within the gay community, what happened when you quit?
Well, it felt almost like I was a bit of a pariah in the first instance, where I was highlighting behaviors. So that a lot of my friends were doing. Subsequently, we're not friends so much anymore. In the case of not anything bad happened, but I was called crazy. I lost my mind.
Wow. It must be very difficult because, I'm guessing that within that community, certainly for some people, you probably feel quite isolated at the beginning anyway. And suddenly you found a community and then it's almost like you're isolated again.
I think so. In hindsight, though, it wasn't the community I needed.
No.
It was something. It was more of the, let's call it the hangout community.
Yes.
The connection community.
Yes, absolutely.
Because we would get together and the conversation was around altered states of mind.
Anything related
to that. So it was quite harsh to go through healing and also then a new layer of rejection.
Yeah.
But 4 or 5 years after that, I'm realizing, well, we didn't really have much in common.
Anyway. No. You so often find that. I say this to clients all the time when when they're first quitting alcohol, they're often so worried about friendships and, oh God, what if, I want to go out with the girls, or I want to do this. And I just always share, well, no one can predict what's going to happen. But the reality is the people that are your real friends, they kind of come along for the ride. They kind of grow with you. It doesn't mean they'll necessarily quit alcohol or whatever, but they come along with you and kind of support you somehow. And the others just sort of naturally fall away. You don't typically tend to have a big bust up. You just don't see them again.
Exactly. I mean, I grew up, all through my life, I've been rejected. I grew up in a school where I was bullied. In the 80s and 90s, you couldn't have ginger hair at school. So my nickname was...
Ed Sheeran changed all of that, didn't he? Bless him.
Well, yeah. And also, it's only really in England. Everyone else kind of celebrates it. And it's now kind of a bit in fashion in the gay world.
Totally,
But I was called Fat Ginger Faggot. That was a kind of nickname I had. So I grew up with all this rejection. So I just wanted to belong somewhere. And then I started to get a sense of, this is going to make me feel more accepted. Mm-hmm. But going through the healing phase, you just don't feel that. I think it's still a work to always feel that you might need to be accepted, but you stand in your own shell a little bit firmer.
Yeah, totally.
It's taken a while and I'm not perfect at it, but I'm getting better at not caring so much about what people think of me.
Absolutely.
I'm paying my bills,
Yeah, exactly. I think it's also interesting, just going back on what you were saying about, your work as a nutritionist, and this resonates so much with me because for so many years I was sort of queen of holistic living and writing books and best-selling books and doing talks about holistic living and well-being and every aspect of holistic living. And I used to kind of pride myself on being the person who did the whole holistic picture. So it wasn't just about food. It was also skincare without chemicals. It was also cleaning your home without chemicals. It was the fabrics you wore. I used to pride myself on being across all of this stuff. And yet through the whole time, I was stepping around this huge elephant in the room, it was alcohol. And I just saw that as, oh, well, that's my little treat. Thank God my thing was called Imperfectly Natural, because I certainly was. But it is interesting, isn't it, how we have these blocks around certain things and until the conscience kind of kicks in.
Yeah, our ways of knowing are limited based on what we know at the time.
Yeah,
I think if I, going back to my behaviours were a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, the perfectionism, the body control, the people pleasing, the substances, alcohol.
Yeah.
But healing is giving that insight and just realising what a lot of looked like dysfunction was just adaptation. And I thought health and healthy living was all about getting your gut health right and eating without sugar. And nowadays I'm a lot more relaxed. It's interesting. You have to have an idea of what's healthy and what's not, but it's better to eat a burger happy than a salad sad.
Yeah.
That's where I am now. And
yeah, I love that. That's a great phrase.
But of course, with alcohol, that was something that was very much a shadow on my... And on this, I'm someone that is not very good at asking for help.
Ah, okay. So and do you think that's, you know, is that, why is that? Just because of the sort of isolation, you feel as though no one's going to be looking out for you?
I think shame.
Right.
I trust in how people can help me. I'm very good at intellectualizing my thoughts and problems. So if someone comes in and maybe crowds my thought process, my issue is feeling and accepting love, which I still have issues with these days. You know, I don't think you go through these journeys and you come out perfect and things are all great. I still have a lot of things I'm working on.
Yeah.
I think seeking, you know, I'm happily now to go to an AA meeting. And now I quite enjoy going, but going to an AA meeting when I first became sober, like over two years ago, was like, that is such a, my unconscious mind was, that is such an vulnerable thing to do and show your face in a, especially a gay recovery group where people are going to know you, compared to my conscious mind is, you can do this. You don't need to have this alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about the body dysmorphia piece.
In terms of the book or my...
Yeah, anything you want to share with me. Funnily enough, it's the second time I've heard that phrase in 2 days, because, you know, obviously I knew I was going to be chatting to you, and one of the coaches that I work with was raising it, the fact that it can come up with clients.
So with body dysmorphia, my view on it is it's not about what you're seeing in the mirror. So it's not how you look at yourself. You know, some people think that body dysmorphia is, I can't possibly see myself in the mirror, or, you know, that thought doesn't enter my head as in my lived experience. I can quite happily, as a gay man, look at myself in the mirror, quite a lot. But body dysmorphia is the inherent persistent ability to, always, I never feel enough. That's and it's my body is being, was used as a tool to hide my pain.
Yeah.
And preempt. So if I could put my body on autopilot by whatever means, then I'm more likely to be accepted and not rejected and take one pillar of my misery away. Not saying I was always in misery and always feeling. But it was also a numbing behavior for me. I could focus on something rather than not focusing on my trauma and my mindset.
Yeah. So forgive me, because it's not an area I know a lot about, but would someone who has body dysmorphia typically have an eating disorder?
There could be comorbidities, but I wouldn't necessarily say I typically had an eating disorder. Yes, I have in the past elicited behaviors, might have been maybe restricting too much, having an orthorexic approach, like obsessively monitoring. But in terms of the eating disorders, such as like anorexia, bulimia, that may not appear in body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
Body dysmorphia may be also biological, in the way your brain actually you perceive how you look. Obviously, there's a big environmental aspect of it. We're praised by, you know, these cover models with sculpted ads. Mm. The conversations are developing a bit further now, and we're going more into, more so probably in the female area, but in the gay male space, there's a lot of pressure to have the perfect, in brackets, in quotation marks, body. And it causes a lot of anxiety, numbing behaviors. And also when you are in that circle, when you are surrounded, you think, by people who are accepting you, sometimes that comes with other behaviors such as drug use, partying excessively, and other risky behaviors. But for body dysmorphia, in terms of how to work with body dysmorphia, it's first of all understanding it, how it's presenting, where it comes from, the etiology of it, and then looking at the pillars of it. Now, some people disagree with me in terms of thinking that nutrition is, you should really be careful with nutrition with body dysmorphia. But I feel that a sensible approach to nutrition, such as your blood sugar balancing, understanding how your hunger hormones work, because a lot of people with body dysmorphia, they will binge eat, they will do the all or nothing approach and then have other concerns or break it. So there's nutrition, which helps you feel grounded.
Yeah.
And it helps you balances one pillar of that. Then it's looking at your mindset, questioning why you think the way you do and opening up that conversation about perhaps it's understanding that. But the big part of it, particularly in my case, was my trauma.
And
it was working with that. And then on top of that, then you have looking at your environment, looking at relationships, etc. So it's an evolving topic. I think I look at it from a functional lens, which is how I've always looked at with nutrition and picking out the idea of whole health
and
trying to not leave any stone unturned.
Yeah. And how do you feel that, you know, currently, how do you feel social media is sort of influencing body image then? I mean, both for gay men and for all of us, actually. Does it feel worrying to you what's going on at the moment?
I think especially with this new, I'm not sure if you're aware of the Louis Theroux Manosphere.
Yeah, the Manosphere, yeah, yeah.
So especially when I was watching that, I was thinking these guys are all on steroids.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's like you can pretty much tell when someone's on steroids by the way their physique is shaped.
Yeah.
Especially around the shoulders and the delts. I mean, I don't want to pinpoint, but I think when the image is given, that's the perfect aspirational thing to do. I think it creates a lot of pressure, especially with social media is probably quite a lot to blame with this, with the way things, especially with AI now as well, you can hyper-realistic images of people are creating. It's causing more self-doubt than anything.
And definitely.
It's the norm now to, it's not necessarily about I need to get fit, no one thinks about doing fitness to their health, for their health really, and especially when they're young, it's all about getting a better body. Plus when you're doing that in environments, certain gyms that might push certain ways to do that, it comes with all the layers that I've been talking about. So without questioning, like myself, it was like, you know, for example, all the different side effects for steroids, they can be, some of them can be very extreme.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But for me, my side effects were, my cholesterol was going very, very high. My liver enzymes were elevated. I got shin splints. I couldn't walk to the store. I had a hair transplant because I lost my hair.
Wow. None
of this also came to
me. None of that gets advertised, does it?
No, because that doesn't get advertised. It's always the benefits of it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Also what I would like to draw attention to is the apathy that comes with taking anabolic steroids. And
right.
So the change of personality.
Right. Okay, interesting.
Which I know we're jumping a bit from the social media bit, but it's linked because people will take that and the air of arrogance, I want to say, that comes with it. It's
like,
this is the best thing to do. Testosterone, obviously, when it goes in your system, it gives that, it's an elixir for the male in a way that it's hormone replacement therapy, depending on what dose you're doing, and also what comes with it, and how you're doing it and how you're getting it and the quality. But all this is pressured. You can buy this stuff on Instagram. You can buy, it's as soon as you start engaging with certain posts, it comes up.
Yeah, I can imagine. What would be a healthier way for a guy who is, you know, wants to look good? How can we do this in a healthy way?
Well, it's understanding, first of all, that no matter what you put in your body in terms of substances or steroids, you still have to have an idea of how to eat well and train if you want to develop a muscular physique.
Yeah.
Now, there's no issue in doing that. We all want to look and feel good. There are, but it's how well you're, how much you're designed to, you're willing to push your body to do that. What is a balance for you? And I don't think any of this information that we're given is considering anyone's lived experience.
No.
So their lifestyle, their background, their trauma, plus also what's going on with them.
Mm.
A lot of these fitness influencers, they will be, their sole job is to work out and talk about it.
Yeah.
But for someone who's working 40 hours a week, fitting the gym in afterwards and then trying to manage everything, it can be a bit overwhelming. So it's taking a step back and also looking at the research, what's actually going to be good for building muscle. So understanding, do I really need 300 grams of protein or is 150 grams enough? Or do I need to take that? Or are there any natural testosterone boosters that I can be taking if I want to do that? Plus a step back to understand, what are my reasons for doing such? So what are my reasons for wanting this? Is it purely to fit, look better on Mykonos? Or is it because I just want to feel better in myself?
Yeah.
And then it's coating the diet around what's normal, what's going to be the tipping point. Are you, if you follow a strict diet and you break it on Friday, the diet's not good for you. So it's finding balance.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think, you know, that's exactly it, isn't it? It's about that balance. And I know, you know, obviously it was a completely different scenario. And I was neither dieting nor taking anything like that. But I do know that when I was drinking, I was always in search of something. It was always whatever was the next thing, whatever the hell it was. And, you know, you mentioned that feeling of not being enough. It's that thing of not being enough. And I think once you've quit alcohol and presumably some of this other stuff, but certainly for me, alcohol was absolutely the key piece, you're able to at least be open to this idea of, can I actually start to have some self-esteem, some self-love? That might be too strong a word for some people, but if you can start to become curious about that piece, then it changes everything, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I think alcohol and drugs, whatever they are to you, they create a sense of ease, belonging, confidence, numbness. For me, taking them away was so frightening because of the amount of discomfort that I didn't have any crutches anymore. So I was left alone with my raw feelings.
Yeah, had to feel all the feels, as they say.
That's the problem. And then, they ease off. But it comes almost in waves. Sometimes I can sit now, like last week I was sitting feeling discomfort, but I was able to have the awareness to separate myself and say, well, I have this discomfort because I've had a particularly stressful time at work. I'm thinking about alcohol because I'm romanticizing. My brain remembers.
Yeah, exactly. The associations. Yeah,
exactly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, but I have to do a lot now to, I think the key with sobriety is really paying attention to your nervous system.
Yeah.
It's been the number one thing I've had to nurture.
Yeah.
Because alcohol, in a way, did my nervous system a favor by regulating it in a weird way, but coming with a lot of other problems itself.
Sure.
Now I'm left on my own. It's taken the stabilizers off, and I'm left to try to navigate my nervous system. So it's like, and also I get a lot of sometimes FOMO. When I don't have the community so much.
The community is key, isn't it, really? Being able to be alongside other people who've been there, done it, got the t-shirt, makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Exactly. And it's surrendering to that. Like, I know better, I can do this. And just the allowing the life to be unfamiliar and accepting that the old social dynamics are now not there. And hi, I'm lonely. I am an incredibly lonely human being. And allowing myself to say that without feeling like I'm in a bad place. Because I don't think loneliness is, maybe it's uncertainty, but I'm rebuilding and also I'm incredibly grateful to what sobriety has brought me.
Yeah.
There's no going back for me now, because I know the reward of having a clear head is so much. It's a gift. And I think when I see people talking about sobriety, and it's a bit, everyone talks about this, how feeling clear-headed and someone maybe when I was drinking, I was like, oh, this is cheesy, but I'm feeling it. I know if anything knocks my head in terms of not being clear-headed, not waking up and feeling okay, this is today, I am more like, I'm so protective of that space now that I wouldn't like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just tell us a little bit about what's in the book. What was your, intention when you set out to write it?
Writing the book. So this is one of my books. I have another one coming out next year called The Queer Health, Queer Guide to Nutrition and Lifestyle.
Yeah, we'll have to get you back on for that one, definitely.
Perfect. What I was writing these books to try to find give a resource for people to be able to explain the healing process as something that I went through based on all the kind of lessons and healing I went, both with the psychedelics and my master's thesis, my master's work and my life as a nutritionist, and put them together in more of a, not necessarily a manual, maybe a recipe book to understand both what body dysmorphia is and body image, plus the pressures around in the gay community. Plus understanding how someone can start unpicking their own life and questioning. I guess it begins with asking better questions, but I've written the book in a way that's quite reflective, because it has exercises in it to follow, or journal prompts, to be able to reinforce what I'm talking about in the chapters. So I talk about, I have the book here, and I try to bring my messaging through with compassion, but also at the same time, I talk about things like your shadow and trying to understand self-honesty, because these are all things I've had to go through, like self-honesty, what behaviors aren't serving you anymore, and coaching, almost a coaching guide to be able to bring yourself into a level of regulation where perhaps you're not questioning your body image so much, but you're looking behind that lens and thinking, who am I? And how can I heal, especially as a gay man, when we go through life with adjustments based on societal rejections?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know when the book's published. It's out already, isn't it? The book?
This one's out, yeah.
It's out now. So how has it been accepted within the gay community? Do you know?
Yeah, I think people are enjoying reading it. A lot of feedback I get that it's quite eye-opening.
Good.
Because I don't think people think they're going to go into a book and read about body dysmorphia and maybe some tips and how to, some surface level tips about, avoid the mirror, for example. This book is not about, it's not surface level. It's going deep into the healing process, and it's designed to almost work with your psyche to deliver healing.
Yeah.
If you follow the book, or become curious about what are your thought processes. If you can, Some people just say it's really helped me think differently.
Yeah, great, great.
It's
yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to, I was going to say, what is your, if you could only take away one message from the book, what would it be? And I'm guessing that might be it, right?
you can start to think differently. Yeah, I would say it's to start to question and question your assumptions about yourself.
Yeah.
And to develop a level of curiosity.
Brilliant. So tell us where we can find out more information. Obviously, I'll give the link to the book. Where can we find out more and follow your stuff?
So my website is danielo'shaughnessy.com, but my Instagram and other handles are The Naked Nutritionist.
Great. Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, we definitely have you back on, Daniel, if you're willing to come back. There's a lot there we could look at.
It's a lot.
I don't know if you probably don't know, but I also am trained in EFT, matrix reimprinting, and family constellations. So I don't know if that's anything you come across. But
Yes, I talk about that in the book, actually.
Do you?
Because there are, in the healing modalities, I mention all the ways that you can heal. It's not always a psychedelic experience. But EFT is incredible for men releasing emotions, because I'm not.
And I don't know if you've ever tried matrix reimprinting, but it's incredible. Incredible. And family constellations is, again, it's actually like literally life changing in perhaps a 50 minute session, you know. So let's chat again. It would be great to connect.
Okay, lovely. Thank you for
having
me.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much. I really appreciate it. And all the best with the book. Thank you.
Bye bye.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.